This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
Welcome to the Mom Room Podcast. My name is Renee Rina, and I am definitely the mom friend you have always wanted. All right, so today I'm talking with Angela Bueno, who became a mother in 2018, and she is now a sleep and well-being consultant and the owner of Nurture Eve Sleep Support, which offers sleep support to families that focuses on connection and validates instinct. So her mission is to educate new moms on what normal infant sleep is, empower them to listen to their intuition, and co-create a plan that works for the entire family. Which I love because I'm all about doing what works for your own specific family. So Angela, to start, I thought you could tell us a little bit about yourself, your family, and why you started Nurture Eve Sleep.
Yes, so I'm Angela. I live in Pemberton, BC. I have a two-year-old daughter, and I had her in September of 2018. And back then, I had no idea what babies are like. I didn't have a lot of friends that had babies. I was just not exposed to them. So I had very unrealistic expectations of what she was going to be like. Mm-hmm. When she was born, she spent the first month sleeping all day, all night. She just woke up to feed. And then after 1 month, that's where I felt like hell let loose. she just like didn't want to be in her crib anymore, and I did not know what was happening. So then I started reading all of these baby sleep books, looking online for answers, and it felt so frustrating, and I mm-hmm. felt anxious all the time. I felt like a failure, basically, because I didn't know her. And so I tried a few sleep training methods, like the pick up, put down, controlled crying, and none of it worked. It just felt like I was fighting with her all the time, and my Yeah. whole day revolved around her sleep. And it didn't feel good to me. So then one day I just gave up because I was like, this is enough. I don't want to do this anymore. So I went to her room. She was, you know, she's been crying for 20 minutes now. I went in her room and I picked her up and I sang to her and rocked her to sleep. And it took 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And I put her down and she stayed asleep. And I walked out of the room. Like I was like shaking. I'm like, what just happened? I'm like, wait. So if I pick her up and put her to sleep in my arms, she'll sleep. Like, yeah. you know, and I was like, wait, this is not what I've been told. And it felt easy. We were both calm. And so that's when I was like, you know, there must be something about this because it cannot be a coincidence that my baby wanted to fall asleep in my arms and the babies around me, because now at this point, you know, I was like part of mom groups, they're all talking about how their baby won't sleep in the crib and yeah. they only wanted to fall asleep at the breast or in their arms. And so I'm like, if my baby does that and they're doing that too, then why are we being told that we're not supposed to do this?
Yeah. I can totally relate to that feeling because when Milo was not like a little baby, because I know what you're saying, when you just bring them home, like they're sleeping all the time and you're like, oh, this is pretty decent, you know, and then they mm-hmm. wake up, you feed them, they fall back asleep, like it's fine. But once it started to become like he was at the age where, you know, he should be having scheduled naps and then your life revolves around their sleep mm-hmm. and it's super, like you were saying, stressful. And by the time my husband got home from work some days, I was like, wow, like I've had the worst day ever because all I was doing was trying to fight him to sleep or get him to sleep
or, you know, like he didn't want to be in his crib. And it was so frustrating. So finally, after a while, there was a huge like stretch of time for a few months where I just gave up. And I was like, I am just going to do whatever he needs me to do to sleep. And that's it. I don't care if I have to go get a latte and drive around the city for 45 minutes. I don't care if I have to lay in my own bed with him for 45 minutes until he falls asleep. Like, I was like so sick of fighting him napping and being frustrated all day. So like, I totally relate to that feeling for sure.
Yeah. And I remember my partner would come home and he just didn't understand what happened during my day because I was so frustrated. And he's like, why? Like, just like sit on the couch and hold her. And I'm like, no, you can't do that. The sleep book said this and this and this. And I'm like, yeah. You know, and he just didn't understand it. But yeah, so then when that happened, I really wanted to learn more about this. So I looked online to see like who can teach me about this. And that's when I came across Lauren Heffernan. She created the baby-led sleep approach. Okay. So I was taught by her. And the baby-led sleep approach focuses a lot on the mom following her instincts and her baby's cues. Okay. And we do not create a pre-created sleep plan. We really get to know the family as a whole and their well-being. We want to know what their specific goals are and create a plan around that that is age-appropriate and responsive.
Right. I like that because for us, we let Milo, like we woke up with him 2 to 4 times a night until he was 11 months old. And I know a lot of people are, you know, waiting, like, when is it an appropriate time to sleep train? And I was just never comfortable with letting him cry. And like you said, it just didn't feel right. Like it just, I tried a couple times and I was like, there's no way. So my husband and I just one night we decided, okay, we're not letting him cry. It doesn't work for us. So we just decided, okay, we're going to get up with him and that's all there is to it. And we were able to do that. Like I, you know, being in Canada, we have a maternity leave. So I was able to be home with him the next day. And when he would sleep during the day, I would just sleep. You know, I didn't have any other kids. So it's easy for me to say like I was able, or we as a couple were able to get up with him. Whereas, you know, some people might not, like some people maybe need to sleep. So they're more stressed about doing the sleep training. But I like how you guys kind of assess the family situation and what, you know, what would be best for them.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Because each family's goals are different. Like one problem for another family may not be a problem for the next one.
Yes, I love that. So, okay, so one of the things when we worked on our little outline for this episode, one of the things that you mentioned was that a lot of clients that you talk to, their goal is to have their baby sleep independently. So I just thought maybe you could talk a little bit about that. Like what does that actually mean? And, you know, like do babies actually want to sleep by themselves? And you also mentioned, you know, you want your child to have the desire to be independent as opposed to just acting independent.
Yes. Yes. I love talking about this because yes, right now in the modern Western world that we live in, we are so obsessed with getting our children to be independent. And while, you know, that's a well-meaning approach to parenting, I think the problem when it comes to focusing way too much on just the independence alone is that we forget the role of nature and development. And right. Children are not tiny adults. Children are children. So we should not be expecting them to do something that they're not capable to do.
Right.
Yeah. And so I think if we want to raise our children in the best possible way, we should be more focusing on the fact that not the acting that they're independent, but to have the desire to do things on their own. So like as you have a toddler, I have a toddler too. Like now they're starting to be like, no, me do, yes. me do, you know? And that's because like for, let's say putting shoes on as an example, like their whole lives we've been putting on their shoes. Eventually they're going to be like, no, I want to do it. Right.
Yeah.
And that's what you want from them. That's their emergent self coming out. And so when it comes to sleep, if we force our children to sleep on their own, then they will know that that is the expectation from them.
Right.
But it's not their desire to fall asleep on their own. And when we wait for them to be able to do that, then it's less stress for them. It's less stress for us. And they're growing. It is from deep dependence that they can grow to become independent adults.
Right. It's like a smoother transition. Like if you just let it kind of happen at its natural time. Like I remember being younger and you hear about parents that would sleep with their kids. And at first, like before I had a kid, I was like, oh my God, like that's crazy, you know? But like they're not going to be 18 years old sleeping with their parents still. Like maybe like it's just a short-term thing. And now that I have a child of my own, I like he's not a good co-sleeper at all. But I'm always like, oh, like I wish he would sleep with me sometimes. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I can see how once you have a child like that, the view changes. And it's also like that's our view in, you know, North American culture, and it's not the same around the world.
No, it's not. And yeah, like I'll get clients that'll say, we're bed sharing right now. And then, you know, the dad will be like, well, is that okay? Because I don't want them to go to kindergarten and they're still sleeping with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I get that. I get that fear of like, oh, well, maybe they'll just never grow up. But again, we're not thinking about the development part. Like they will grow up.
Yeah.
They will. And then they will want to have their own room. They will want to sleep on their own. But yeah, I grew up in the Philippines. I was there until I was 15. And now I remember going back there a couple of years ago. And I had, oh wait, no, that was last year. I had my baby with me, and my nanny, when I was growing up, she came to visit us, and she put my daughter to sleep. And I'm like, yeah, you just put her in her crib and then you walk away and then she'll fall asleep. And then she's like, what? Why? Why would you do that? And she went home to tell her husband, and she's like, I can't believe she would do that to her daughter.
So what does she do?
So parents over there in, at least I know in Southeast Asia, bed share with their kids. Okay. until they're ready to move to their own room.
I love it.
This episode is brought to you by Little Spoon. I'm just going to be honest here. As a busy parent, it's important to keep your life simple and convenient, especially at mealtimes. Nobody ever told me how stressful mealtimes can be. Little Spoon is one way to help you do just that. Little Spoon delivers fresh, healthy meals and snacks straight to your door that your kiddo will love at every eating stage they are in. Their goal is simple. It's to keep your kid healthy, but also to make it the easiest part of your day so that you can cut through all the drama of mealtime without compromise. Little Spoon's baby blends are fresh, organic baby food from single ingredients to multi-textured purees to take the stress out of starting solids. Their biteables are transitioned to table early finger food meals that are cut to size to promote easy self-feeding with healthy, balanced foods that are free of artificial junk. Little Spoon's plates are for toddlers and big kids. They taste amazing, and even the pickiest eaters will love them. Think hidden veggie mac and cheese, chicken nuggets, and adventurous eats like pot stickers, gnocchi, and more. Little Spoon also offers smoothies, lunchers, and snacks. Did I mention it gets delivered right to your door? It is so flexible, so easy, and everything stores right in the fridge and freezer. You can check out the menu and change up what you order every single time. The price is right, the quality is unmatched, your kids will love it. It's a huge win-win for your family. So simplify your kiddos' mealtime with 30% off your first order. Go to littlespoon.com/momroom and enter our code MOMROOM at checkout to get 30% off your first Little Spoon order. This episode is brought to you by Magic Spoon. You guys know I have been very intentional with what we've been eating lately. I'm looking at protein, I'm looking at sugar content, and avoiding things like artificial ingredients or colorings. Milo used to always want pancakes or waffles in the mornings, and now he is getting into cereal, and I'm so excited because Magic Spoon is the perfect option. Their variety pack has 4 flavors: cocoa, fruity, frosted, and peanut butter. They have 0 grams of sugar, 13 to 14 grams of protein, and only 4 to 5 grams of carbs per serving. They're made with wholesome ingredients, no artificial flavors or dyes, and I'm just so happy that he's getting a good amount of protein before he goes off to school. And it's a great snack for me and my husband too, because 13 to 14 grams of protein in the cereal, now you add a high protein milk, you're set. That is such a high protein snack or meal. I should also mention that it is gluten-free, grain-free, and soy-free. So go to magicspoon.com/momroom to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code MOMROOM at checkout to save $5 off your order. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. So try a delicious bowl of Magic Spoon cereal today at magicspoon.com/momroom and use the code MOMROOM to save $5. Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this episode.
And this is such a good conversation to have. We were talking a little bit before I pressed record just about how there's 2 viewpoints. And for some reason in North America, every topic that surrounds, you know, having a baby is very like black and white. And people almost like, instead of just like, oh, this family's different, like they're choosing to go about sleep in this way, like that's great, it's working for them, people are so judgmental. And we were talking about how, you know, in North America, it's almost expected that you're sleep training your child as soon as possible. And the goal is always to get your child to sleep through the night. And it's like, oh, whose baby is going to sleep through the night first? Mm. And it's not that way everywhere. And I'm happy that hopefully a lot of people will listen to this episode. And, you know, if you are co-sleeping with your child, if you rock them to sleep, you know, for, you know, they're 5 months old and you're still rocking them to sleep or whatever it is, like, that's okay. And I like how you said, like, don't let other people decide what's a problem for your family. Like, if it's working for your family, then that's great. So this is a good conversation to have. Yeah. The next thing I wanted to talk about, which I love this topic, is the self-soothing. So again, in North America, we hear a lot about, you know, your baby needs to learn how to self-soothe. So I, just because of my background and attachment, I don't like this. And I don't think, you know, Milo right now is 25 months old and he still can't self-soothe. Like when he throws a tantrum, I'm like, I almost feel bad. Instead of getting frustrated, I'll feel bad because I'm like, oh, he doesn't know how to regulate his emotions. You know, like this mm-hmm. doesn't happen for a long time for people. Some adults can't regulate their emotions. Like,
yeah.
So, you know, when you have a baby and people say self-soothe, that's not really a thing. And I agree with this viewpoint. Again, people are going to debate and argue over this, but what's your take on like the self-soothing thing when it comes to falling asleep?
Yeah. So I'm going to admit that I'm turning 31 this week, and it's only since very recently that I learned how to regulate my emotions.
There you go.
You know, like I would have a fight with my partner and I'm just like sitting in this like, you know, like now I am just learning that there are tools that I can have to regulate my emotions. And so, yeah, so teaching a baby to self-soothe is not a thing. Yeah. Because to be able to soothe yourself, you must be able to regulate your emotions. And the part of the brain that regulates emotions is the prefrontal cortex. And the prefrontal cortex is highly underdeveloped in babies. In fact, it's not even fully developed until you're in your mid-20s.
Yeah.
So to expect a baby to soothe themselves is unrealistic. Now, all babies are different and their temperaments and personalities are different. And there are definitely going to be easygoing babies that can put themselves to sleep.
Yes.
But that's just who they are. You can't teach that to other babies.
Yes, exactly. I love that point for sure. Milo was a pretty easygoing baby. But I know people who, you know, no matter what they did, their baby is crying all the time, seems to be upset all the time. And it's what you said. It's just like that's how that baby is. And it's not like bad. It's not, you know, that's just how they are. Like adults are different and so are babies.
Yeah. And another thing is that for babies to calm down from a heightened state of stress, they can only calm down with the help of a parent,
right,
or another primary caregiver, or an adult who has a full brain. And so when a baby is crying at night or in the day, or you have a toddler that's having a tantrum, the only way for them to down-regulate from there is if you as a mom or dad shows them how to calm down, or how to, like, they need to co-regulate with you. They can't do it on their own.
That's when Milo throws a tantrum. Like, we had a major one this morning because I was trying to put on his sweater.
Of course.
Exactly. Like, oh, like, what was I thinking? But I always try and stay so calm, because in my mind, I'm like, if I get worked up, then he is just going to go even harder and longer. So it's almost comical if you think about it. Like, they are losing their minds over something so basic, but you just like stay super calm and like wait it out. And eventually, like you said, it's like a co-regulation thing, and then they calm down. And it's like it never happened all of a sudden.
Yeah, exactly. And the beautiful thing about that is that when they see the people that are taking care of them act this way, eventually when they grow up and they have the capacity to regulate their own emotions, they'll know how to do it. Yeah. Because their parents have shown them how to do it over and over again.
Yeah, I just saw a TikTok the other day and it was so good. And it was a guy saying how children, like when an adult is all over the place, like emotionally, children like don't find comfort in that because it's unpredictable. And I was like, oh, that Absolutely. Makes so much sense. Like, you know, if like they want to be surrounded by an adult that is predictable, like, oh, if I get upset, I know that my mom or my dad or whoever is going to be calm, and I can predict what their reaction is going to be to my behavior, which is, it's crazy when you think, like, it's such an adult, you know, thing to think about. But when you apply it to children, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I just wanted to point out, because I remembered this morning, you said that you had a meltdown because of a sweater.
Yes.
This morning we had a meltdown because Google Home started talking.
I believe it. I believe it.
So I dropped her off at daycare and I'm like, just so you know, she might be talking about Google for the next 30 minutes.
Oh, no. I know. It's like sometimes toddlers, when they're in that age where they could just go off over the stupidest thing, you're like walking on eggshells, like constantly. You're like, oh, please don't let this like upset him. It's so funny because like they're just like these little people, but they're so like scary sometimes.
Yeah, but I love that we can laugh about it now. But earlier it wasn't that funny.
No, exactly. I was like, should I cry? Like, I don't know what to do. The thing about the self-soothing that I always thought about, which again, this might be an unpopular opinion. And before I say this, I will say that we eventually, when Milo was 11 months old, let him cry. So, you know, we did the cry it out for a few nights and he's been sleeping fine ever since. So I will preface this. But when people say, you know, they leave their baby to cry and now it's like, oh, look, they learned how to self-soothe. It's like, in my mind, I always wonder, did they learn how to self-soothe or did they just learn that you're not going to come when they cry? And which is so sad if you think about it, because they're still having that negative emotional reaction, or they're still, you know, upset in the crib if they wake up in the middle of the night, let's say, but they just don't cry because they know that that doesn't get them the response that they want, which like that's how I looked at, you know, letting Milo cry. And eventually we got to a point where we were like, okay, like it doesn't work for us anymore. So we did it, but I can see both sides. And like, is that how you feel about letting them cry?
Yeah. So you pointed out earlier that the babies just think that nobody's going to come for them.
Yeah.
So that is what happens.
Right.
Okay. So there are six arousal states of a baby. So first one is being asleep, drowsy, hypo-aroused, alert, hyper-aroused, and flooded. So when you leave a baby on their own, in their own room, and it's dark, it's scary for them. They don't understand what's happening because they don't have a concept of time and place. They don't know where you went. So then they start crying. When they start crying, they get into the hyper-aroused or flooded state. And like I said earlier, the only way for them to down-regulate is with the help of a parent.
Mm-hmm.
When the parent's not there and they're in the hyper-aroused or flooded state, they're burning a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And so when they're burning a lot of energy, they might fall asleep. And that is not because they learned how to sleep on their own. It's because it's their brain's defense mechanism to tell them that, hey, this is enough. You're done. Like, you can't go any further because you're burning a lot of energy. And that's when they fall asleep.
Yeah. And I will say there's really, like, because obviously people debate this all the time and people build their whole careers on sleep training. And, you know, it's a huge topic in the mom and baby and parents like community, obviously. But I will say there is a lack of research on all of these topics. And like, there is research that shows that, you know, the baby in sleep labs and whatever, which again, it's like, how accurate can the data be when they're completely out of their home and they're in a sleep lab and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
But anyways, there's very few studies, and some have shown that the baby, you know, they still are waking overnight and they still have that like elevated stress hormone.
Yes.
But then yeah, they fall back asleep without crying. But again, like we're saying, it's not that they have learned all of a sudden to self-soothe at friggin', you know, 3 months old. It's just they learn that crying is not gonna work and not gonna bring the parent into the room. So yeah, like all this stuff, like it's very, you know, people are on one side or the other, and you know, I did this and it worked great for us. And it's like, yeah, we're not saying it doesn't work. Like, it does work. If you if your goal is to get your child to sleep, nobody is saying that it doesn't work. And again, like some families have, like they don't have a choice. Like the parents need to sleep in order to function the next day and be able to keep the family fed and running smoothly. And like, I'm not, you know, disagreeing with that, but there are like two sides to look at it. And I am happy to share both sides. So yeah, there is limited research, but there is some research that supports that the baby is still getting upset, but just not crying.
Yeah, exactly. Because there are many reasons why a baby will wake up in the middle of the night. It's not just for hunger. Mm-hmm. You know, going back to development, like there are a few stages of sleep progression. So the first one's 4 months, and then 8 to 10 months, and then more and more. And that's normal because of development. And they'll, when, you know, when they reach a milestone, they'll wake up in the middle of the night as well. And that's normal. But the only difference is that if they have previously been crying for a long period of time, they'll still wake up, but they're just not going to signal to the parent that I'm up.
Right.
I need your help.
Right.
And it's time to give a shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode of The Mom Room and providing me with samples. Thank you, Claritin. Guys, I am starting to come to terms with the fact that I do suffer from allergies. I used to think, oh, I just have really bad sinuses. No, you have allergies. So let's talk a little bit about my symptoms. I wake up with a stuffed, not a stuffed nose, but like I have to blow my nose constantly. So it's like it's producing mucus and I have to keep blowing my nose. It's all itchy. The palate, like the roof of my mouth is itchy in the mornings and I'm trying to like scratch it with my tongue. It's really irritating. And the insides of my ears get itchy. It's one thing to have those symptoms when I'm just hanging out at home. But for example, yesterday I was at book club and my nose kept getting so tingly and itchy and I kept having to go to the bathroom to blow my nose. Luckily for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. It's designed for serious allergy sufferers. Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. This double action combination of prescription strength allergy medicine and the best decongestant available relieves sneezing, a runny nose, itchy and watery eyes, an itchy nose and throat, and sinus congestion and pressure with ease. So if you're ready to live life as if you don't have allergies, it's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter or ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy. You don't even need a prescription. Go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
So what, I'm just curious what your sleep, like how did that go with your daughter?
Yeah. So, when I came across Lauren Heffernan and learned all about normal infant sleep and attachment from her, I basically just stopped giving a shit.
Yes.
about what other people thought. That was a bit hard because I was still constantly surrounded by other moms, and you know, I still had like this kind of mom guilt feeling that, oh, maybe I should be doing something else. But I tried to tune that out. And the more that I focused on who my daughter is, what she needed, I got to know her better. and sleep just came so much easier.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, of course, she still woke up in the middle of the night. And sometimes we would bed share because that's easier for me and easier for her.
Yeah.
And then eventually she didn't need me anymore. She started sleeping through the night at 11 months. She stopped needing me for sleep when she was 15 months. But I do want to say that she's 2 now, and most of the time she sleeps through the night. Most of the time she doesn't need me to fall asleep. But when there are, you know, emotional days or transitions, or she's sick or whatever, she still needs me. And I don't care if I have to help her again.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't mean that I'm creating a bad sleep habit. It just means that she, as you said earlier, like, you know, having a predictability of how you respond, she knows that if she asks for my help, that I'm there.
Yeah.
And then next time, if she doesn't need me, then that's cool.
Yeah. We're the same way. And I think, you know, after, because we didn't let Milo cry until he was 11 months old, we really understand when he's actually upset versus when he's just like half asleep, half awake and making weird sounds. And so we can just kind of let that go, and we wait, you know, 5-10 minutes, and usually he just falls right back asleep, versus there's times when he is awake and I know that he wants one of us. So we're better able to kind of gauge what the situation is and if we should go in, if we should get him. And I will say, like, some nights I don't sleep well either, but I'm an adult and I can understand what's going on, and I can, you know, lay in bed, like, you know, check my phone or whatever it is, get up, go pee, like, drink some water. Yes. You know what I mean? Like, and so yes. how can we expect, you know, these little babies or toddlers or little kids to just like, no, you have to sleep like 12 hours every single night and never wake up? And it's like, if they do wake up and they're having trouble falling back asleep, of course they're going to want, you know, their mom or their dad or their parent, caregiver, whatever, to help them fall back asleep. Like, it makes sense to me. And I think sometimes we expect our children to be like robots. It's like, well, we did the sleep training when you were 6 months old and now you should be sleeping through the night. And as soon as you like deviate from, you know, sleeping a solid 12 hours, like, well, that's too bad, you know? And like, but they're not robots. They're just humans too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And this, I'm sure a lot of moms have heard before, like, don't give them a sleep association, because then, you know, they'll get way too attached to it. And like, I have a sleep association and I'm an adult.
Yes.
And that's okay. And like you said, you can comfort yourself to sleep because you're an adult. You can go get yourself a glass of water. Why can't my daughter have a bottle of milk
yeah.
in the middle of the night?
Yeah. I know, I sleep
and with... And so I gave her everything.
Yeah, we sleep with sound machines. Like, I am obsessed with sound machines, and I will not sleep anywhere. Like, if we're in a hotel, if we, you know, go visit family somewhere, like, my sound machine is coming because I love it. And yeah, I'm an adult, so yeah. He still has his pacifiers and his sound machine. Now he sleeps with his Woody and Buzz Lightyear dolls.
oh my gosh.
Oh yeah. He loves
them. That's a lot of friends.
Oh yeah. His crib is, it's like party central, but you know, I don't know. I hope people listen to this and they're like, oh, okay. Like, because like you said, when you decided, you know what, I'm not going to give a shit about what other people say I should be doing, I'm just going to do what feels right. I think there's so much pressure on parents to have their kids sleep through the night, and they look at their child waking at night as a problem, or like as like there must be something wrong and they shouldn't be doing that. But I think it's important for people to know that, like, no, it's okay. And, you know, we all wake up at night sometimes and we all have bad nights and it's okay. So do what you want to do to help the situation and whatever makes makes your family happy. And don't worry about mm-hmm. other people. Oh my God, that's like my number one thing. Like, don't worry what other people are saying. It's not, if it's not a problem for you, then it's not a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. I always tell my clients to not take sleep advice from people that are not there at 3 o'clock in the morning to help them.
Yes. Oh, yes. So next, I thought we could talk about attachment a little bit. So how do you incorporate, like when you're working with clients, how do you teach them about attachment, or how do you incorporate it into your programs or your consultations?
I don't necessarily teach them about the theories, but I just, when we create a plan, I kind of incorporate them.
Okay.
One of them would be the stages of attachment. So in the first year of life, babies attach through proximity. So that's why they always want to be around us, near us. And if they can't see us, they must be able to smell us, hear us, or are those all the senses?
Hear, smell, touch.
I'm just like, wait, what? But yeah, so, you know, I offer them strategies like taking the crib sheet and sleeping on them for a night so that the baby can smell them, because when they wake up in the middle of the night and they can smell that mom is there, then it's more comforting for them.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
And another thing that I was thinking about is, you know, if mom regularly sings a lullaby to them, then they can record it and have it playing in the room instead of a white noise machine or another type of machine so that they can hear mom's voice. Just those things make babies a lot more, feel a lot more comfortable to know that they're just here, they're around.
Right.
Yeah. And then another one is that attachment is hierarchical, meaning that they're in an attachment relationship, there is a caregiver and a dependent,
right,
at least in the family
yep.
relationship. And so the parent always needs to be the caregiver, and the child needs to be in the dependent role.
Right.
It should never be the opposite. And babies start to take credit for things that happened around the age of 9 months. So prior to 9 months, when a baby cries, you meet their needs, right? So they cry and then you feed them or change the diaper, whatever.
Yeah.
But then at 9 months, they're old enough and you kind of know them enough that you now start anticipating their needs.
Mm.
You don't need to wait anymore for them to be hungry before you feed them. You feed them before they're hungry.
Right.
And if you're still kind of following their cues and waiting for them to tell you what needs to happen, then the child assumes the caregiver role, and then now you're becoming the dependent. So usually when this happens, parents will see like bedtime battles. So like, you know, a toddler would be like, oh, I want to read 500 books or I want to go to the bathroom 3 times and I want to have a snack. And, you know, so it's like they're running the show and you're just following and you're getting frustrated. Why don't you want to go to sleep? So when that happens, we do a lot of education around setting boundaries. So I want to make sure that mom is actually comfortable with setting boundaries during the day, because when children are not aware, you know, they're not used to hearing no, they're not going to be okay with it at nighttime.
Right. And then it might be something where during the day, you know, as a parent, you just kind of let it slide and you don't set the boundary and like, you know, enforce it or like act on it. And then at bedtime, you're like, well, crap, like now, you know, they are expecting what happened during the day to happen at nighttime. But you're like, I want you to go to bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And but like when you have a toddler, there's not a lot you can do, because now they can walk and they can walk out of the room. A lot of them can talk at 2 and be like, mommy, come back. Right. And
yeah,
at this point, like it's really hard for for parents to just walk away and not do anything about it. And so they end up, like, bedtime takes an hour or two sometimes. Yeah, so we do a lot of, practicing how to set boundaries during the day so that they can be in the lead, because that's what parents need to be. They need to be in the lead.
I love that. Milo, it's hilarious. At bedtime, like when it's starting to, you know, like I'm going to put him down soon, or we do it together, me and my husband, we'll be like, we hang out on our bed before we put him in his crib, and I'll say, okay, are you going to grab Woody and Buzz? You're going to go sleep with Woody and Buzz? And he shakes his head no. But then, like, he never, and I'm surprised, and I'm going to knock on wood right now, he never puts up a fight. Like, he'll shake his head no, and then, like, you know, 30 seconds later, we'll be like, okay, grab Woody and Buzz, we're going to go to sleep. And then he just, like, waves goodbye to me and goes to bed. But I'm like, I'm waiting for, like, this battle to ensue. But so far, so good.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm crossing my fingers for you. But
seriously.
I mean, if you're pretty comfortable with the way you parent during the day, he can sense that. And he knows that you know what's best for him. And so you're in the lead. It's not to mean, like, you're bossy or anything, but it's just like,
right,
I know what's best for you. I'm your mom.
Yeah, I hope that's the case.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. So I wanted you to talk a little bit about what normal infant sleep looks like versus not normal. Because I know you had mentioned that sometimes there's an underlying issue that could be causing babies to wake up, you know, more than what is considered normal. So I wonder if you could just talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So there's a huge range of normal.
it's true.
Yeah, it's hard to give a number because even toddlers, it's still normal for them to wake at night.
Yeah.
But one thing to note is that if your baby has never given you a 2 or 3 hour stretch at night, ever, they're waking hourly, that is not normal.
Yeah.
And that's when I would encourage parents to go to their family doctor or do some investigations and see what's going on there. And some of the most common things that I see with families is tongue tie, so undiagnosed tongue tie. Obviously, if your baby has a tongue tie, then you'll have feeding issues, and then baby's not getting the calories or the nutrition that they need, and which will then lead them to waking up more at night. And also, if you have a tongue tie, you have a hard time breathing. So if you have a hard time breathing, you can't sleep deeply. So that's the biggest one. I'm so passionate about telling parents about this. Go see a lactation consultant. If you have had feeding problems before and you know it's kind of gone ignored, or your family doctor didn't really take it seriously, go see a lactation consultant. Mm-hmm. And have that assessed, or a pediatric dentist.
Oh yeah.
That and food sensitivities are a big one as well. Sensory processing disorders, those things. Yeah, definitely take a look at those things and consult a specialist. Yeah. Because often, I hate to say this, but I'm going to say it. Because when families, like the families that I support, you know, they'll go to their family doctors and they're not supported. They are, they're just told, oh yeah, well, you know, go give him bottle formula. Like, that's not the solution.
Yeah.
That's not the solution. Because even if you give your baby formula and they have a tongue tie and they can't breathe properly, how is that going to help?
Yeah.
So go see a specialist.
No, and you know, this is that, like what you just said can be applied to a ton of things. Because, you know, family doctors are general physicians. Like, my husband is a specialist, but like, I have friends that are general or family doctors, and like, they see everything under the sun. So you can't expect them to be, you know, like obviously they're going to catch a lot of things and they're going to send people for the appropriate tests or to like they're going to refer out to a specialist in whatever area. But like you have to kind of advocate for yourself as well and like go seek out someone that specializes in whatever you're having an issue for. So like even for moms after birth, you know, like seeing a pelvic floor physio, seeing a chiropractor that deals with women in postpartum, like it's not, once you get like the okay from an OBGYN or your family doctor, like there's more going on. So I totally agree, like see a specialist.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, if you see, you know, if you end up seeing a family doctor and they're like, oh yeah, you know, that's okay, go and sleep train or go and get a bottle of formula, most parents have the gut feeling, most parents know that this is not normal and there's something wrong. So like you said, advocate for your baby, advocate for yourself. Yeah, it's so important. I cannot stress that enough.
Yeah. The last thing I wanted you to touch on was something that you do when you work with families. And I loved this part of when I was reading through your website, was validating mom's instincts, which is kind of what we just touched on. But I love how you kind of approach it with, you know, like what is making your baby happy, you happy, like what works for your family. So I know you're like okay with, you know, nursing the baby to sleep, and you were saying a lot of the times you have clients that are almost afraid to always nurse their baby to sleep because, you know, we're always told that you're creating a bad habit. And so I thought you could just talk a little bit about validating the mother's instincts and, you know, allowing families to kind of do what works for them.
Yeah. So I think as sleep coaches, we can know everything about what is there to know about sleep, about babies and nutrition and all of that. But at the end of the day, nobody knows the baby better than the mom. And so I cannot ask a mom to do something that she doesn't feel good about.
Yeah.
Because if I do that, she will not follow through. it's just, if a mom does something that she doesn't feel good about, the baby can sense that.
Yes.
And so if the mom feels good about nursing to sleep, sweet, let's do that.
Yeah.
Let's keep doing it as long as it works. And why would it not be okay to nurse a baby to sleep when mom is enjoying it and baby is enjoying it? That's not a bad sleep association. But if a mom is doing something that she doesn't enjoy doing, and she feels anxious about it, and baby can feel that mom is anxious about this, so now he's not falling asleep, that's a bad sleep association.
Yes.
Because we don't want baby to feel the stress in the room where he falls asleep. So yes, I'm all about validating mom's instincts, because whenever I talk to them, it's like I give all of this education to them and they're just agreeing to it because they know in their guts that this is what they're supposed to do all along. It's just like it's basically just telling mom to stop listening to everyone else.
Yes.
Because, you know, if she's okay with nursing to sleep and her neighbor is not okay with it, that doesn't mean that she's not supposed to do that.
Exactly. Do you know how many messages I get on Instagram from moms who, like, you know, it could be something stupid like a TikTok or something that I'm just talking about on my stories, and they will tell me their story about how they just like suffered through whatever it was because that's what they thought they should be doing, and they felt guilty if they didn't do it, and they're like, I wish, you know, like I would have heard you say this before, or, you know, like finally someone's validating like how I feel. Because like you said, like it's almost like they feel pressure like to do something that they're not happy about doing. And look at us, like for months, I never had Milo nap in his crib, like hardly ever, because it was a freaking fight and I was miserable. I didn't want to do it anymore. So he napped in the car. He napped in the stroller while I was shopping. He napped in bed with me while I just laid there and, you know, and he's fine. He didn't develop any kind of bad habits. He sleeps perfectly fine, like at daycare, at home, like he's great. So yeah. I could have spent those like 2 or 3 months absolutely miserable, or I decided, you know what? I'm going to take him swimming some days in the morning because it exhausts him. And then he's going to sleep in the car on the way home, and I'm going to get a latte and like go look at houses and enjoy my life. And I'm going to, and I'm so much happier for it. And that like making those decisions has kind of like stayed with me. And that's how I do everything now. It's like, what is going to make us happy? Like Milo happy, me mm-hmm. happy, my husband happy. And other people might not agree with it, and that's fine. But like at the end mm-hmm. of the day, if moms are confident and they're able to just do what works for them, it's so much easier to be a parent.
Yeah. What was it? Was it Carl Jung? He had this quote that says, the biggest burden you can put on your child is the unlived life of a parent or something like that. And I always think about that whenever I make a decision about my child, because like, you know, we recently got into a new daycare, and the first few days were hard, and I started thinking, well, maybe I should just pull her out, and I'm like, no, I don't want to pull her out because I have stuff that I want to do.
Yeah.
I want to sit on the couch on my own.
Yes.
And like I need to clean the house, and I want to work on my business because that makes me happy.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Mm. And sorry, I just wanted to add as well, like this also like validating mom's instincts, it can be applied to the opposite side as well of okay, I don't want a nurse to sleep anymore,
right?
That's okay as well.
Yeah.
I just want to say that for if there's anyone listening that's like, well, but I don't enjoy doing that
totally.
anymore, and I just want to say that's okay. You don't have to do that. Let's find another way to put your baby to
exactly.
sleep.
Totally. It's about the mom as well. And I think we are so focused, like when a woman is pregnant, it's like all about them, and we're so focused on the pregnancy. And then once the baby comes out, it's like nobody gives a shit about the mom anymore. And like what makes the mom happy doesn't matter anymore. It's like, no, this is for baby. This is the best for baby. But no, what's best for the baby is the mom and the baby and, you know, parents,
yeah.
like the family being happy and functioning properly. And if the mom is not functioning, is not happy, is miserable, then it's not going to work. And I totally agree with you. So to end, I thought you could tell everyone where they can find you. I'm going to put all your information in the episode notes. But yeah, a little like your website and your Instagram handle and anything else that you want people to know about.
Yeah. So my website is www.nurtureevesleep. So nurture, NURTURE, Eve, sleep.com. I offer a free 30-minute discovery call for any parents that are wondering if we would be a good match. And I have Facebook and Instagram at NurtureEveSleep. And yeah, you can find me mostly on Instagram. I'm in my stories there every day.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for talking with me. I love this conversation. I'm happy to, you know, have both sides of the sleep world. So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. That was so fun.